If I can have your attention, we will go ahead and get started with our program this morning while you are finishing up with your breakfast. We have a number of announcements, and I want to get those done and out of the way so we can have the maximum amount of time available for our speaker this morning. I want to welcome all of you to another meeting of the First Friday Breakfast Club, an association of gay men and the largest private breakfast club in the state of Iowa. And we have been thus for about 25 years, and we have given over $275,000 in scholarships to Iowa high school seniors going on to further education and who have done significant things to educate about LGBT issues and reduce homophobia in their schools and communities. It is something of a tradition to invite those who are here for the first time to introduce themselves or be introduced by their host, if they have a host. It is not a requirement, but if there are those of you who are here for the first time, and I know from looking around that there are some, now would be the time for an introduction. Anyone? Rick.
I'd like to introduce Brett Clark's family that is sitting with me here at the table, and Sherry Doe, who is here from Central College.
Welcome. See how easy and painless that is? Are there others? All right, well, those of you who are regulars, if you'll look around and look for unfamiliar faces, make sure that they feel welcome and are encouraged to attend again in the future. We have a number of announcements. First, our book exchange in the foyer. Thanks to my partner, Scott Cucneo, for coordinating that. And you're welcome to borrow a book. There's no checkout system, return it or not, your choice. If you have books that you'd like to share, bring them, and we'll work them into the system. If any of you have not received an RSVP by email, it is only because we don't have an accurate current email address for you. If you will get that email address to me, you will then get a monthly reminder of our meetings, and you can hit reply, and we can include you in our headcount every time. Also, I invite you to check out our website, ffbciowa.org. There you can click on our past speakers, and you can hear an audio recording of their presentation if you missed it, or you can hear it again if you want to. Also in the foyer are some sample newsletters. We do a monthly newsletter. Virtually all of the articles in the newsletter are written by capable people who are part of FFBC. Interesting material, and those of you who are not paying more than 3 months at a time would need to subscribe to get that monthly newsletter. There's a subscription form there, and the subscription is $15 per year. The next is something I want to bring to your attention as a warning. Every day at the office, despite the IT filters that they put on my computer to keep junk from getting to me, I still get phishing and fraud attempts. And I wanted to just read one that I got very recently. Hi. Wish you will not care about my English language grammar because I'm from Saudi Arabia. I toxified your device with a virus, and I'm in possession of all your private information out of your OS, whatever the hell that is. It previously was mounted on an adult internet page, after which you have selected the movie, it, my program, instantly gain access to your computer. Afterward, your cam captured you playing with your stuff. Also, I caught a movie that you have viewed. Soon after a short while, it also picked up every one of your device contacts. If you want me to wipe out your everything I currently have, transfer me $600 by Bitcoin. This is my wallet transfer address. And if any of you are interested in paying this ransom for me, I can get you the address. At this point, you will have 27 hours to decide. As soon as I will get the transfer, I am going to wipe out this footage and every little thing thoroughly. If not, please be sure that the evidence will be submitted to all of your buddies. Okay, buddies. Be forewarned, the 27 hours is just about up, and you are all on my contact list. So brace yourself. It's not going to be all that interesting, I promise. Next, I want to call on Carly Stayer, who's going to make an announcement. Carly. So if you will just fill out that sheet with your contact information and your name. On each of the tables is one or two, maybe three sign-up sheets, or you can contact Carly or Logan. Also on each of the tables, there's a pen. If you wanted to track all of the hotels and motels I've ever been in, you can collect the pens and pretty much figure it out. So sign up, make contact with Carly, and volunteer if you can. Next.
An hour makes a difference. Thank you guys so much.
Next, Rick Miller wants to make an announcement.
Just letting everyone know that Monday chorus starts, and they need it at 6 o'clock the first night. Otherwise, it's 6:30. Generally, rehearsals last around 3 hours. There is a break in the middle for drinks, and so I hope that some of you will either think about it or tell your friends about it, and see you Monday night.
Yes, Bruce?
Real quick, Charles Grassley is actually going to be meeting with the public today down in Osceola.
Of course.
Which is much more his favorite territory, and I'm going down. If anybody wants to go with me, more than welcome. We can have multiple vehicles. And
has anyone notified security? They will find out. Okay, next. Board meeting is next Wednesday, the 12th. At Scott's in my home, and 6:15, and members are certainly welcome to attend the board meeting. Anyone who wants to, let me know. I can give you easy-to-follow directions. Our newsletter copy deadline is going to be a week from Monday, September the 17th. So those of you who are regular contributors, that's our copy deadline. For others who may have something on your mind, if you will just get it down in the roughest form and get it to me, we will get it in shape and make it look like you are a terrific writer, and publish it in our newsletter. So if you have something on your mind, why share it, and we'll be happy to share it through the newsletter. Next, Thursday, September the 13th, 7 o'clock at the Ames Public Library, Lauren Olson is going to be making a presentation on Gay in Nebraska and Out in Ames. Should be interesting for those of you who have heard him speak here. Fascinating presentations. And if you haven't or would like to hear him again, that's the time and place. September the 28th until October the 14th. An event coming up that Matt McIver wants to talk to you about. Matt, there you are.
Good morning. I'm Matthew McIver. I'm the artistic director of the Iowa Stage Theater Company. And on your tables, you'll find our season brochure. I just wanted to let you guys... Yes, thank you very much. Our first show of the season opens this month, the 28th, at the Des Moines Social Club's Come and Go Theater. We're doing Fun Home, adapted from the graphic memoir by noted lesbian cartoonist Alison Bechtel, by Lisa Cronin and Janita Sori. It's a beautiful show. It kicks off a great season that you can follow through this. We're happy to have you consider tickets, or season tickets are always a bargain. So thank you very much, and hope to see you at the theater.
Thank you. Then on October the 19th, be sure to save the date. That is going to be the Safe Schools sponsored Spirit Awards event at the Iowa Event Center. The reception is at 5:30 and the dinner is at 7 o'clock. And there's information about that also on your tables for those of you who are going to be interested in doing that. Also, go online and check out Prime Timers of Central Iowa. They have myriad activities planned throughout the month. There should be no reason that you would sit at home not interacting with other gay men. And with that, I will turn to Ryan Crane, who is going to introduce our speaker for this morning. Ryan.
Good morning, everyone. Call and response. So I have the pleasure of introducing Brad Clark this morning, who is currently the president and CEO at Gill Foundation. He joined the foundation in 2015 as the vice president of partnerships at that time, and has moved into the role as president and CEO in January. He leads the foundation in its vision and the board through prioritizing, implementing, and measuring work and the grant making that the foundation does. Many of you know Brad began his career here in Iowa. His previous experience was as campaign director at One Iowa, where I'll get to that part in a minute, built a coalition of nearly 100 allied organizations representing more than 200,000 Iowans. Brad, along with smart people, friends and allies, many people in this room, and Lambda Legal, helped make marriage equality legal here in the state of Iowa in 2009. In addition, Brad developed One Colorado as its first executive director and did very similar work at One Colorado that he did at One Iowa. Interestingly, Brad also developed the human rights campaigns, yes, the yellow equal signs, that human rights campaign, their Project One America. He led a cross-organizational effort to dramatically expand equality and to bridge the divide that exists for many LGBT Americans. And in my staying in touch with him over the years, I guess I could succinctly understand it to be that he made it okay to be gay in blue cities in red America when he was at HRC. So very important work that he did there. I had the pleasure of being on staff at One Iowa with Brad from 2008 to 2010, and he kind of started, you know, my career off on a fast track, so I owe Brad a lot personally as well, and look forward to hearing him speak this morning. Brad.
Well, thank you, Ryan, for that really kind introduction. You know, we shared a pretty incredible journey in the weeks and months after the marriage victory here in Iowa. I think some of my favorite memories, winning Eric Palmer's race, winning Kurt Hansen's race, really solidifying the marriage victory here. To this day, it's still probably the hardest but the most rewarding job I had, thanks to a lot of organizers like Ryan, so thank you. So it's really quite great to be here this morning. You know, I remember coming to these meetings many years ago, and a lot of folks in this room offered me really critical support in the aftermath of what happened to me at Central College after I came out. Actually, as I reflected getting ready for today's remarks, it's actually my kind of sweet 16 of coming out, I realized. And so many, many folks in this room were really with me during a pretty vulnerable time during my life. Also need to tell you my parents are here, so please keep that in mind as you ask questions. I would really appreciate that. And it's actually quite rewarding that they're here this morning. You know, I remember telling them years ago that I was going to go fight for gay rights instead of going to law school. And I think they thought that I was nuts. But it's pretty incredible to see how far our movement has come, how far Iowa has come. And no offense, Jonathan, or the other lawyers in the room, but I'm very glad I did not go to law school. So Jonathan asked me this morning to talk about our movement's current landscape. And I think you all should have probably served Bloody Marys and mimosas. It's not a great outlook. I'm going to give a pretty sobering assessment of where we're at. You know, my boss really demands for our team to be straight shooters, not sugarcoat things. And so this is going to be a pretty honest assessment of our current landscape and where the movement's at today. I think top of mind, someone's already mentioned Chuck Grassley, but I think top of mind for me is this week as we watched the hearings on the Brett Kavanaugh nomination. What will his nomination and perhaps confirmation to the U.S. Supreme Court mean for the progress that we've seen over the last several years? You know, as we understand it, Kavanaugh is not going to go directly at overturning Obergefell. That said, we should be very, very concerned and very alert about what he's going to do and the rest of the court would do. You know, our opponents are much more clever than going after the heart of Obergefell, but there's clear evidence they're going to erode, demean, and diminish a lot of the progress on marriage and other issues that we've achieved over the last few years. Just 12 months ago, Justice Thomas actually begged the Federalist Society to bring forward a new case on marriage at their annual convention. None other than Brett Kavanaugh was actually the chair of the Federalist Society's Religious Freedom Task Force, and they're actually the reason why he was nominated. He's been vetted and groomed for this position by the Federalist Society for many, many years. There's also attempts at a state level to undermine marriage all across the country, from Texas to Tennessee, in Washington State, in New Mexico, and in my adopted state of Colorado. Much like Roe v. Wade, we fully expect our opponents won't actually go to the heart of the marriage victory, won't go to the heart of Obergefell, but they will actually gut the victory that we've achieved. You know, much like women in Texas for the last many years, or perhaps now Iowa, who have to drive hundreds of miles to access healthcare, will our families actually have to drive hundreds of miles to get a marriage license? I think that is the key question that we're all struggling with as we watch Kavanaugh's nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. Doesn't just stop at marriage either. There's that pesky cake shop that keeps coming back over and over, and again in my adopted state of Colorado. This has been particularly interesting as of late. You know, our opponents are actually going a step further than marriage. They're actually attempting to erode some of our most fundamental civil rights protections at a state level now. In the first masterpiece case, you know, SCOTUS technically ruled in favor of Jack Phillips, the baker, but it did not grant him the right to refuse service to same-sex couples. It didn't grant him the right to refuse service to LGBT people, simply based on his religious beliefs. But it did declare that he did not get a fair hearing at our state Civil Rights Commission. And no matter what our opponents say, what they do, Kennedy and the court were very, very clear on this point. So now Jack the baker, he's back. He's comes with his $50 million a year, $50 million a year law firm. It's called the Alliance Defending Freedom. This time they're actually suing Colorado's attorney, Governor Hickenlooper, our attorney general, and the state Civil Rights Commission. And so today they're actually claiming that the civil rights statutes to protect LGBT people from discrimination are in and of themselves hostile to religion. So the exact same civil rights protections we have here in Iowa that we passed several years ago, they're declaring that those rights are actually hostile to religion. They're asking for special carve-outs, as they fondly have liked to call them for our community, special rights for people of faith. Essentially, they're asking for the right to refuse service based on any deeply held religious belief. So I know many of my friends and perhaps some folks here dismiss this by saying, why don't you go to a different cake shop? It's easy as that. But just imagine how far this could go. Can a pediatrician refuse service to a kid of a lesbian couple? That actually happened in Michigan. Can a pharmacist refuse to fill a prescription for a person living with HIV or a trans person who needs hormones? Can Kim Davis come back and start refusing to issue marriage licenses? And then what happens when they come after the other parts of the civil rights laws, things like employment or housing or even public education? What do we do then when they start using the same logic against other parts of our codes? So it's very, very clear to me, and it should be to you, that these folks simply do not like us. They don't believe that we should be able to get married. Some of them refuse to admit that we even exist. And they actually don't want us protected under civil rights statutes. So they're attempting to get rid of the entire statutes themselves, which doesn't just affect gay people or LGBT folks. It actually affects women and people of color and Muslim and Jewish folks alike. So they're stacking the deck against us, and they're using the courts on their side. So let's talk maybe about a bit rosier topic, public attitudes. So I don't have to tell this group that we've come an incredibly long way. Like I said, I remember coming to these meetings years ago, shortly after I came out. As Ryan said, you know, my first job was actually organizing folks around the state around safe schools for LGBT kids. That seems like eons ago. You know, I remember going to those first meetings in places like Sioux City and talking about LGBT issues, and none of us knew how that was going to go. And who can forget some of those nasty fights we had with people like Chuck Hurley, that pumpkin farmer from Grinnell, Danny Carroll. And we are really living in quite different times. I don't have to tell you all that. But I'm reminded by my friends in the Jewish and the African American communities recently, repeatedly as well, that we shouldn't take anything for granted and we should never, ever, ever stop. And I'm sorry to say that I think that we've actually plateaued. And there's growing evidence that our numbers are actually slipping among the public. Still too early to really tell what's going on or why this is happening. You know, is it the Trump effect? Did we get caught up in the current political shitstorm? Or is there really something else going on, something more fundamental going on with our society? So we fund an organization called the Public Religion Research Institute. They're a polling institute that constantly polls public attitude on various issues, LGBT being one of them. So they recently found that 46% of the American public supports the right of small business owners to refuse service to LGBT people. Last year, so today it's 46%. Last year it was 41. We've seen a 5-point jump in just 1 year. The survey has also showed a precipitous drop since 2013 in the public's belief that LGBT people face discrimination, decreasing from 68% in 2013 to 55% in 2018. That's 13 points in just 3 years. Other polling suggests the exact same decline. This year, GLAAD found the drop in acceptance for LGBT people for the very first time in the history of their polling. And get this, that drop appears to be driven by people between the ages of 18 and 34, with the greatest shift happening among white male millennials. So their findings actually reflect trends across several other studies that we're looking at and that we've seen recently. And that is really being driven by today's young people, quite surprisingly. So get this, millennials and Gen Z, these are folks who were born between 1980 and maybe the early 2000s. These are folks who grew up with the internet. So these folks are more conservative today than boomers and Gen Xers were at the exact same age. As we all know, generations tend to get more conservative as we age. So does this really mark a steady shift away from public acceptance of LGBT people and social justice in general? And again, this isn't just impacting LGBT folks. We're talking about the treatment and the public attitudes of women, of religious minorities, and of people of color. And as we see the shifts across a broad spectrum, we really see it depending on how questions are asked. So if you ask a question, do you support marriage equality, or do you support gay rights generically? Our numbers are quite high. But when you actually dig into the questions and ask values-based gut questions about how people feel, you know, things like, would you take your kids to a gay wedding? Or how would you feel if your kids were taught by a gay teacher? Or how would you feel if you saw a picture of your coworker's wedding with their same-sex partner on their desk? Our numbers plummet. So as you dig into these questions and as people actually have emotional gut reactions to our lives, that's where the numbers are really slipping. So how can this be happening? you know, the next generation has the most number of LGBT, self-identified LGBT folks than any other generation. So how, what's driving these numbers? To be honest, we don't know. It's quite perplexing. It's very confusing. We're digging into this, but it's one of our movement's current biggest struggles to figure out what's actually happening beyond the politics and beyond the laws, what's actually happening with the public right now. So moving on, I'm not sure I need to talk to you about what's going on in Washington, D.C. I'm sure you all watched the news, and I already warned you, you should have had Bloody Marys. But a few highlights. Number one, Betsy DeVos. So Secretary DeVos, she has now directed the Department of Education to throw out civil rights discrimination cases against transgender kids. Jeff Sessions, our favorite attorney general, he has now created a religious liberty task force, he's calling it, in the Department of Justice to defend people who use their religious beliefs to discriminate against LGBT people. The Department of Health and Human Services, they've now removed protections for LGBT patients, and they've actually created an entire new division, a whole group of people who are dedicated to defending healthcare workers from discriminating against LGBT people. And then there's the attempt to kick out 15,000 qualified military personnel out of the military, 15,000 trans folks who they're trying to boot out of the military. Luckily, this has been on hold given pending litigation, but it's still an attempt by our administration to kick folks out of the military. So I, needless to say, it's not a pretty picture at the federal level. But believe me, not all is doom and gloom. There are signs of progress really at the state and the local level. So we've become quite good at destroying very, very bad bills. So this last year, we've actually, our communities faced nearly 120 anti-LGBT pieces of legislation all across the country. These are bills to criminalize transgender folks from using the restroom, bills that would stop public school teachers from giving advice to gay kids, bills that would allow you to do whatever the heck you wanted based on some deeply held religious belief. The good news is almost every single one of them were defeated, with three exceptions: Kansas, Oklahoma, and South Carolina, where bills passed that allow taxpayer-funded foster care and adoption agencies to actually not place kids with LGBT couples. These are taxpayer dollars being used to discriminate against LGBT folks in Kansas, Oklahoma, and South Carolina. But nearly every other bill of those 120 were defeated. And that's really thanks in huge, huge part to the business community. Apple and Salesforce and Coca-Cola have joined forces. Even folks like the Texas Chamber of Commerce, or the Metro Atlanta Chamber have joined forces with us to defeat these bills. Last week, I spent several days with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. I was mentored by labor lobbyists, and it's a fascinating change of events to be now working so closely with folks like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And it's not just defense. We've also seen some progress as well, especially at the state and local level. New Hampshire recently joined 19 other states to protect LGBT folks from discrimination. Jacksonville, Florida is now one of the largest metro areas to protect LGBT people from discrimination. Conversion therapy bans have now passed in 14 states and the District of Columbia. And through work with state agencies, this is the stuff that's not sexy, it's not going to get banner headlines, but the things that actually make our lives better. So we've seen administrative policy changes that impact 4.6 million LGBT people. This is really in states like, in purple states like Montana or North Carolina, Louisiana, Ohio, and Virginia. So in the face of all of this, all of the stuff we're seeing at the federal level or these rollbacks at the state level, changes in public attitude, I'm often asked, what are we gonna do? What's our game plan? What's our strategy? And I'll be honest, the route forward is quite tough. It's hard, it's full of obstacles. I'm preparing for a board meeting in a couple of weeks to go talk to our donors about how we're gonna invest this money to make sure we see progress. And it's hard, I'm stumped. I don't know exactly how we go forward. But I don't have to tell this room, it is nothing we haven't faced before. We've seen incredible obstacles over the last many decades, and we've overcome them. Lack of political power, troubling public rhetoric about our lives, assaults on our rights. These are things we've seen many, many times. So I work for a guy who has given away over $500 million of his own money to advance LGBT rights. It's an incredible privilege job to work with someone who's dedicated his resources and his life to do this. And you can believe he is a computer engineer by background. So our North Star is very clear. Everything is measured. And our North Star is to achieve comprehensive non-discrimination protections, an equal playing field for the most number of people in the shortest amount of time possible, using the least amount of money that we can. So I don't need to tell you all this, but today it's actually legal to discriminate against LGBT people in the majority of our country. You can get fired from your job, get kicked out of an apartment you're renting. You can be refused service at a public establishment in 30 states in our country. Luckily, Iowa is not one of those right now. And we have really taken cues from the playbook on marriage to achieve comprehensive non-discrimination. You know, much like marriage, we believe the path forward is state by state. It's how we won marriage, one state at a time, really proving that this is something that Americans believe in. And much like Iowa was critical to the marriage victory nationwide, it sent an enormous message to the rest of the country that even in the heartland, this can be possible. So we need more wins like that in purple and red states around the country on non-discrimination. Unlike marriage, though, we ticked off a bunch of blue states in quick succession, if you remember that several years ago, state after state in blue northern states. We don't have that option with non-discrimination. The last states to actually pass comprehensive non-discrimination protections were Iowa and Colorado, and that year was 2007. So we've not seen any progress in over a decade in all of the other states. So we have 30 states left, and it should be no surprise that they are a shade of red, and they're all located in the South and in the Midwest. But as demographics and politics are shifting quite rapidly, states like Florida or Arizona, Ohio, and Virginia are really places that are fertile ground to move forward. And we've given, and given the climate in these states, we believe there are three things are really critical to the recipe for success. One is conservatives, two are faith leaders, and the third are businesses. So on conservatives, I'm sure you all agree LGBT issues should not be a partisan issue. Given the current political landscape and the state of public opinion, we cannot let LGBT issues slide into a liberal cause. It cannot fall into the same trap as Roe v. Wade has. In our foundation, our founder, Tim Gill, we've been working with conservatives for a very long time, all across from Democrats to Republicans. And we've really seen it pay off. You know, there are the notable folks like Rob Portman or John McCain, but even folks like Orrin Hatch, the guy from Utah, or the Texas Speaker of the House have actually stood up recently for the rights of LGBT kids. So we're making progress with some key conservatives in the Republican Party. On faith, our opponent's strategy is quite clear. They've essentially pitted the civil rights of LGBT people against the right to discriminate of people of faith. And we know it's a small, but it's a very powerful religious minority that's doing this. Like I said earlier, they spend $50 million a year, to litigate and advance policy that is eroding the progress that we've seen. And that's why we're investing in faith programs to actually talk about the fact that LGBT people are people of faith and that many faith traditions support the rights of LGBT folks to be treated equally and fairly. And on business, this is probably the most critical asset we currently have in our arsenal today. We've been incredibly successful at defeating anti-LGBT bills all across the country, but those defensive bills, those defensive wins would not have happened without the business community. You know, when LGBT folks have come under attack, they are often the first ones to show up. And like I stated earlier, it's not just Silicon Valley and New York City businesses who are helping us. We're talking about state and local chambers in Texas and Atlanta and Arizona, in the heart of the South as well. And they really understand that discrimination does have a price tag. And I think it was really helpful that Mike Pence in Indiana or Pat McCrory in North Carolina actually put a price tag on how much that discrimination is costing state governments if they choose to go down that road. So in summary, times are very, very tough. The courts seem stacked against us. We have an administration dismantling our rights, and public attitudes seem stagnant or perhaps actually slipping away. But I truly believe there's light at the end of the tunnel. Like many of you, I grew up in small town Iowa, Pella to be exact. So my experience as a little gay kid in a highly conservative religious town, you know, I never thought that I'd be here today. We're actually talking about protecting our victories, not achieving them. So many of us in this room probably never thought some of these days would come, but it's clear we can't take these victories for granted. You know, over the past couple of years, probably my fondest opportunity has actually been engaging with early leaders in the civil rights, traditional civil rights movement and women's rights movements. Ask them a simple question. You know, if you had to do your movements all over again, what would you do? What would you do differently? How would you have achieved those victories? And the answer has been consistent. Never, ever give up. You may have thought you won, but your opponents are never going away. And we've seen this truth. You know, over the past two decades, we've seen the slow and deliberate undermining of rights for people of color and for women. We've seen the rollbacks of the voting rights, and for healthcare for women, we've even seen little kids locked up in cages. So while I'm encouraged with the progress we've seen over the last couple of decades, we have a long road ahead of us. I believe the beauty, though, of our community, and I don't have to tell the folks in this room this, but that I believe the beauty of our community is the resilience that we have. Folks in this room know this better than I do. We've overcome the early days of our movement, from Stonewall to the HIV crisis, to those bruising marriage battles on the ballot in the early 2000s. You know, we've come an incredibly long way, and we will definitely get there again. So I told you that this would be a sobering message, and I apologize for that, but I just want to thank you for having me here today to talk about you know, a lot of the issues that our community is facing around the country, and you know, what I believe is our pathway forward. So I'd be happy to take some questions as well. Rick?
I'm really glad that you put the leadership part in your comments, because I think there's a whole new generation of leaders coming up. Maybe not the millennials, but past millennials and others. I consider you and Ryan and others in this room a part of that movement, and we're trying to do this history project and talk about the emerging leaders. Do you think Iowa's unique that way, or are there emerging leaders all over in states everywhere?
Yeah, I think there's something unique about Iowa. You know, I remember first moving to Colorado and years ago, and I think there's something ingrained in us from a younger age that you should be part of community and civic engagement. I think some of that is probably the politics in the state and the caucuses, where it's just expected that it's our birthright to meet the next president. And, you know, that's just part of our culture here. I do think there's something also unique about LGBT folks, where, you know, actually the leaders of Black Lives Matter, of the gun rights movement or the gun control movement, there are actually a lot of LGBT folks who are leading those movements. So I think there are some, whatever it is, instilled at us at a young age to rise and be part of other movements too.
Do you think the slip in some of the polling numbers is that people assume once we got marriage equality, we had everything? Mm-hmm. So they don't see the little fights of the equality in housing and stuff like that as an issue.
Yeah, I definitely think that's a big part of it. We have been funding the Ad Council, you know, the folks who created Smokey Bear, those kind of iconic campaigns years ago. We've been funding them to do an LGBT campaign called Beyond I Do. And I sat in focus groups in suburbs of St. Louis and Dallas to watch how people reacted to these messages. And these are people who, like that polling I told you about, who say they support marriage equality, but they wouldn't bring their kids to a gay wedding. They would be uncomfortable if their kid was taught by a gay teacher. You know, that they're well-intentioned, they want to do the right thing, but there's still some squishiness about their feelings. And that's exactly what happened, was they thought everything was solved with marriage and they didn't realize all these other things existed. I think the other issue going on, and you saw this in the months after the election, and that's still going on, where I think that hatred was just below the surface. You know, Southern Poverty Law Center and other folks that we work closely with, tracking of hate crimes in the months after the election, and it was always there. It just has now manifested itself, and it's now publicly okay to say some of these things. Go ahead.
How do the people who are pushing these religious freedom so-called bills with respect to gay people square with the fact that they are making the exact same arguments, exact same statements, word for word, with only one minor adjustment, that we heard 50, 60 and more years ago, mm-hmm. with respect to black people in the South and the civil rights movement? How can you have one without the other?
Mm-hmm. Well, I do believe that when they talk about religious freedom, they're talking about the freedom for their particular brand of religion, which is not something that's shared by all people of faith. So I do think you're right. You know, I actually was reading an article the other day, I think it may have actually been in the Pella Chronicle, and it was talking about how some early Dutch churches were actually burned down because they were speaking Dutch. And that was not okay, and there are these movements to actually make English the official language years and years and years ago before we've seen it in popular culture today. So I do think it's really about people's particular brand of religion. I don't know how they square it away in their head, but it's quite troubling.
Yeah. For many years, I felt like, or I understood, that much of the progress is because more and more people are out and open. People know if your neighbors are gay, your coworkers are gay. Do you feel like that movement is still continuing, still helping the movement significantly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. And I think that people are coming out. You know, the number, it's interesting to see just the number of young people identifying as LGBT. It's just mind-blowing. You know, people are coming out at such younger ages. I do think one of the things that's driving some of these numbers may also be our self-selection into certain communities and the insular nature of either online communities or even physical communities, where if you're LGBT, are you more likely to move to cities or places that are more welcoming, so then it doesn't change the attitudes of people maybe in small towns or in red states. There's actually one of these Google Analytics guy did a study maybe 2 years ago. It was written up in the New York Times, and he, you know, studied all the kind of search history online, and what he used was on Facebook, you know, if you say you're interested in men or if you're in a relationship with another man, what he found was you're more likely to be gay in Rhode Island than Mississippi. So those were the two extremes he used, but you're just as likely to look at gay porn anywhere in the country. So it's not like you are more likely to be gay in Rhode Island than Mississippi. It's just the outness factor and how comfortable you are. So I do think there's something going on with where people are self-selecting into online communities or physical communities. Well, I mean, again, I don't believe, I think your folks should get elected, personally. I don't believe these should be partisan issues. I think some of the challenge we're seeing in places like Florida or Arizona, where Democrats are going to make inroads into the state legislatures there, the problem is that those Democrats are knocking out our friends in the Republican Party. and we're going to be left with a coalition of moderate Republicans and Democrats who still will be in the minority, and it's going to be controlled by crazy people. And so that's some of the issue that we're struggling with as these partisan shifts continue to happen. I do think that if Democrats take back the House of Representatives, you know, there's a chance that they could push forward the Equality Act or some version thereof. I do think we should get to a point, though, of balancing, you know, what Kennedy wrote in the last little bit of the masterpiece decision, that we need to balance the dignity of LGBT people with the rights of people of faith. And we live in this society where we need to figure out how to get to a better place. You know, I don't know that we're ever going to get there in a state law in Mississippi and Alabama. That's going to take a federal law. So in order to get there, we're going to have to compromise and figure out some of these hard issues about the rights of people of faith and the rights of LGBT folks, and how can we live in a pluralistic society that balances some of those.
See, this is a fun time to figure out why should it be a concern or an issue or anything with respect to LGBT when it was not with respect to race 50, 60 years ago. Mm-hmm. If it was okay to ram it down their throats then, it's just as okay to ram it down their throats now. Mm-hmm. And if it's not okay to ram it down their throats now, then everything that happened 50, 60 years ago might as well go in the toilet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's the right thing to do to change our civil rights statutes to make special carve-outs for people of faith or religious institutions. But I do think we're not going to have to, much like any other civil rights law, require churches or houses of worship to do things that go against their religious beliefs. That's currently not the law, and it shouldn't be going forward.
Why is this dichotomy not being addressed aggressively, is what I'm asking. That's what we're not hearing.
Mm-hmm. I think people are talking about it, it's just not getting through. I mean, we're dealing with things on the news that we have never seen before, and it's a constant changing cycle that people are talking about it. It's just our ability to break through is challenging.
That's why I said addressed aggressively. That every time one of these so-called religious freedom bills comes up, mm-hmm. it should be laid out, they should have their noses rubbed in the fact of the parallel to the civil rights of 50, 60 years ago. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be getting a pass on. That should be an issue. Every time it comes up, mm-hmm. the parallel should be drawn.
Yeah. I would encourage you to do that.
I'm not litigating this. I'm saying the people who are litigating it, defending it, making an issue of it, debating it in Congress, should be raising it loud and clear instead of just letting it go by, because you never hear that it has been raised as an issue. Never has it been brought. It's always... Mm-hmm.
I will say that it's while we have that emotional reaction to it, the polling doesn't necessarily bear out that message is necessarily effective with the public. So that's why that.
You got across, they need to get the message. That's my point.
Yeah, but I do believe the messages around the bottom line, where businesses just aren't going to stand for this, they're going to pull their businesses out of a state that have a right to discriminate. That's the message that's actually helping us right now. Yeah.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Tradition to give a token of appreciation to our speakers, and the token of appreciation is a recording of the Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus that we
thank
hope
you.
That you will enjoy.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I wonder when the last time was that he got a standing ovation from his parents. Well done, Brad. You brought a sobering message on the one hand, but you also, I think, demonstrated that there is hope. Having someone of your talent and your insight and your experience involved where you are, keeping on. And I hope that we take from what he had to say, that message, that we do not give up. Reminded me of the story of the colony of water bugs that floated around on the top of the surface of the Atlantic Ocean off the coast of Florida. And there were waves going up and down, and they debated endlessly. Are we on the way up? On the way down? Have we peaked? Have we valleyed? And through all of that debate, they lost track of the Gulf Stream. Where they were headed was England. And it seems to me that that is part of what we're called upon to do, that you are leading in the effort to do, so that we stay on message, stay on track, despite the daily ups and downs that come along from time to time. Thank you very much for coming and sharing with us. All right. With that, a couple of quick reminders. The Grassley appearance in Osceola is next Monday, the 10th. Any of you who would be interested in going, touch base with Bruce, and you may be able to go along for that. Our next meeting will be October the 5th. Our speaker will be Sam Brinton. Sam Brinton is with the Trevor Project. He is also instrumental in seeking to adopt legislation in every state that prohibits conversion therapy from the kind of psychological help that people are seeking and getting. And then in November, on the 2nd, our speaker will be Cindy Axne, a candidate for Congress in the 3rd District. We all have David Young to thank for this. David Young came and spoke to the Breakfast Club, Republican, congressman, and our insurance policy for the 501c3 status that we have, which then gives us license to invite Cindy Axne to be here in November. So you can look forward to that, and I will look forward to seeing you on October the 5th. Thank you for being here today.